informing America's farmers and ranchers. It's Adams on Agriculture, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Here's your host, Mike Adams.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Adams on Agriculture. Thank you for joining us and letting us be part of your day. We appreciate it. Here as we wrap up the week and wrap up the month of July. Always appreciate you being with us and appreciate the radio stations that you are listening to that are carrying AOA. And we have some exciting news coming soon about more joining us. Looking forward to that. Here's what we're going to be talking about today. The treasurer, the United Soybean Board, will be joining us. They just had their July meeting. That's where they kind of set the course for the coming year and what they'll be working on as far as investing soybean checkoff dollars. We'll talk with the treasurer of USB about that. Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, will join us. He is recovering and sounds like doing pretty well in his recovery from the coronavirus. We'll talk about dealing with that and what that's like, that experience, and also get his thoughts on the different bills that Congress looking at, the House version, the Senate version, to COVID assistance for agriculture. We'll get his thoughts on that. And big corn purchase by China. Another one. We're going to talk with Joe Kemp with AgriVisor, get his thoughts on this most recent purchase by China and what it means, and look ahead a bit as well as we talk markets a little later in today's program. So lots going on. Happy to start things off with Jerry Hagstrom with the Hagstrom Report. Jerry, thank you for joining us. And still a big impasse between the House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, over what to do for COVID assistance, right? We're going to wait. Have to wait a while.
Well, yes, but I'm optimistic today because last night on the PBS NewsHour, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell indicated that he expects to negotiate with the Democrats on an increase in the food stamp benefits. He was asked, you know, why don't you have anything in that? And he said, well, when we get to the negotiations with the Democrats, I'm sure we'll discuss it. So I think that's a positive sign. I just wish they'd get going. Now these unemployment benefit, this unemployment benefit boost is expiring today. Now this, and the Senate's gone home for the weekend. But I'm hoping for progress next week.
They still got some big differences, the amount, and as you said, some specifics like on the food stamps and those nutrition type programs. There's also the matter of, do you give the money for agriculture to USDA and let them decide where it goes, or should there be some more specific strings attached and directions on how it goes? So they got some of those things to work out yet.
Well, yes, I'm fascinated with the fact that the Renewable Fuels Association says that USDA officials are saying that they want more direction from Capitol Hill. Now, I haven't heard that from USDA directly, and I haven't heard that from anybody on the Hill. So whether the Renewable Fuels Association is saying that just in hopes that it comes true, or whether that's really the case, we don't know. Certainly, there it's interesting. There, I would regard renewable fuels as a very conventional group. There are groups, of course, that want the Hill to tell USDA to provide more help to small farmers, to local producers that sell to farmers markets and have had some problems. So we'll just have to see. I love the word that Senator Hoeven uses, the chairman of the Senate Ag Appropriations Committee. He says the question is whether the bill will be prescriptive or not. That's a very good phrase.
Yeah, we heard that from the pork producers as well, that they wanted a little more structure in how the money will be used. Now, in my upcoming interview with Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, he says he's comfortable with leaving it up to USDA to decide how the money goes out. So, I mean, there are different opinions out there.
Yes, I guess I would at this point out that in my writing I always describe the Farm Bureau as Republican-leaning and the Farmers Union as Democratic-leaning. I don't think Farm Bureau wants to do anything that goes against the administration if they can possibly avoid it.
Yep, and of course, Zippy Duvall and Secretary Perdue are close friends, so they have that close relationship, so you know they're talking back and forth on those issues. So we'll see how this plays out, but the timeline. So they're not going to get back to it till next week. And then what's the August recess? Is that the August 7th?
Well, in theory, they're supposed to leave Thursday the 6th. I mean, that's supposed to be their last day. And Senator Grassley said he thought that would be the day on which they would vote on it. Now, the House is supposed to leave today, but Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker, is keeping them in to do this deal because they don't have anything to vote on yet. So she's told, Steny Hoyer, the House Majority Leader who controls the schedule, told people don't plan on anything else the week of August 3rd except to be in Washington dealing with the coronavirus. So I'm still hoping that there might be a package by the end of next week. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what the figure will be. I mean, you've got $3 trillion and you've got $1 trillion. Do you meet somewhere in the middle, you think?
Maybe not quite in the middle. But I think the Republicans will give up, will be willing to put in quite a bit of money if they can get their liability assurances in there that companies would not be sued over the conditions under which they are operating amidst the coronavirus. That's what that's the thing that they really want. So I think the easiest way to do that is to give more money to the Democrats for their priorities.
And, of course, the president has been saying some things like the stimulus checks could be more than $1,200.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, one of the biggest oddities in this whole thing has been the inability of the Senate Republicans and the White House to come to agreement. That's really why it hasn't been able to move forward, is that there have been so many differences between the Senate Republicans and the White House. They don't even have a package to present to the Democrats to start negotiating. Yesterday, the administration offered to support a continuation of the $600 unemployment benefit boost until the end of the year. The Democrats wanted it longer, but I think it just became a negotiating point. But there are people who are saying, well, at least they're talking. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, that unemployment issue is a sticky one because while there are many people that need the help, the other part of it is the issue of people making more money not working than going back to work, and they're trying to deal with that.
Right, and the theory is that some people are resisting going back to work because they're making more money staying on unemployment.
Yeah, they've got a lot to work through, that's for sure, and we'll see if they can get it done by the end of next week. All right, Jerry, thanks a lot. We'll talk with you again next week as we learn more. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. It's raining in Washington, and the temperature dropped below 80, so we're in a good place here.
All right. A lot of that going on across the country, actually, and it finally got out to Washington, D.C. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it. Jerry Hagstrom with the Hagstrom Report. Coming up next, we'll talk with the treasurer of the United Soybean Board and take a look at their plan for the coming year. That's next here on AOA, Adams on Agriculture.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture. Now, back to Mike Adams.
United Soybean Board recently held their July meeting, and that's a key meeting for planning for the coming year. Joining us now from Missouri is Megan Kaiser, USB Treasurer. Megan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us on, Mike.
How did the meeting go?
Well, it was different than ever before. We had a 78 board member meeting virtually. And just like everything else this year, it was a new and unprecedented forum for us. But it was successful, and we're really pleased with how it turned out.
Yeah, it's a different world. We're getting used to those kind of things, or trying to get used to them anyway. So I mentioned this is a key meeting, the July meeting for the United Soybean Board. Kind of give us a review of what was discussed and decisions that were made, because this is kind of, you kind of lay out your plan for the coming year or years, actually, right?
Yeah, we had key discussions on not only the fiscal year 2021 coming up starting October 1st for us, and the funding of projects that we'll do, but also discussions on our strategic plan that we're forming for the next 5 years as we look to the future.
So you make those decisions, and you get so many different proposals and opportunities to invest soybean checkoff dollars. I know you look at this very carefully, take this very seriously. Were decisions made about the projects you're going to be funding?
Yes. And now I do want to say, not all the decisions were made in one day on a virtual platform, because that sounds messy and a little bit overburdensome. But our directors, all 78 board members, have had a key part in touching our budget that we set officially this past Wednesday. But we started back, well, actually our staff started in January collecting proposals and concepts from folks that have ideas of things that might be useful to farmers. Our staff helps us decide if those fit into our strategic plan that we're working on, that we're working under at the current time, and then ask those concepts to be turned into full proposals. In June, every member of the board met in subcommittee work, basically, in our supply, marketplace, and demand action teams, and started to really dig in on those proposals. And what came out of that, I think we had over 600 concepts, or maybe even more than that, at the beginning, and we whittled that down to 176 projects that farmers decided were worthy of farmer investment. And so it's been a pretty long process that we capped off here just this week.
It is an amazing process, as you said. When you have that many proposals come in, you have to go through all those, look at them closely, then make the decision that your members feel will be the best return on investment for soybean farmers' checkoff dollars.
That's right. And it's important because it's 78 farmers who are, you know, we're all busy. I often hear farmers say, oh, I just don't have time for this. You know, we're so busy. But to see 78 members from across the country take the time, you know, May and June are not easy times to spend your evenings digging into proposals for funding for any farmer in the country, but our board did it and has done a phenomenal job of saying, hey, we're in different times now. Maybe we need to tweak this proposal to better fit the atmosphere that we're in. Maybe we won't be traveling places as much, but we might need to put a little more emphasis on how we're going to continue our relationships and reaching out and develop new ideas in a new virtual world that we're living in.
We're talking with Megan Kaiser from Missouri, the treasurer for the United Soybean Board. Megan, can you give us some examples of some of the projects that will be funded this year?
Yeah, well, in the, it's across the board. There's out of 176, it's hard to pick your favorites, but we're doing a lot of work in not only, you know, on the supply side, we're working on not only what are the new things, new technologies that would be useful to improving our way of life on the farm, but also making sure that we as farmers get the communication back of what the soybean board is doing. And so to look at farmers is not only pushing for demand to increase, but making sure that we have the tools necessary to connect farmers to the marketplace. We look at making sure that the story of our meal is differentiated from other soybean producers in the world through our sustainable practices, through our quality, and making sure that farmers have the tools on the farm to ensure that those things are happening. So it's really about connecting the entire supply loop, and ensuring that farmers are receiving a return on our investment. Our latest return on investment study was for every dollar we invest at the checkoff, we're getting $12.34 back. That's pretty phenomenal. And that's something that I think farmers can be very proud of during really what is a very difficult time in agriculture.
Yeah, the other thing to keep in mind is when you make an investment, decide to make an investment in a project, you may not see that return on investment for a while. I mean, some of these take time.
They do take time, and that's the beauty of the checkoff, is that this is farmers investing in what farmers care about and what farmers see as our future, and us being able to kind of take hold of our future. You know, we all know that weather has a huge impact. Markets have a huge impact on what happens on our farms. And some of those things we can't really control. But the fact that we have farmers investing in our long-range profitability and new utilization opportunities for the future, you know, it's exciting when we start thinking about farmers being a big part of the sustainability story of other industries. When we talk about our successes in using soy oil for asphalt, for biodiesel, improving air quality so that it's easier for people to breathe. We wouldn't have had those things, including, you know, using soy oil in Goodyear tires. Those things came about because of the checkoff. And so when we talk about our sustainability story, we all focus on that on our farm, making sure that we're financially sustainable. But then now that we're adding to the cultural sustainability story of our users is, I find that really inspiring. And, you know, when we have tough days on the farm, it helps me remember that we're helping others, and it's bigger than just us.
What about your budget for the coming year? Up, down, about the same?
Well, we really wanted to hold a very strong investment. The checkoff has been a strong leader in holding those investments. So this year we're investing $70 million into our future. And I think that that says a lot from the checkoff to say we're holding strong on our investment line. While we know that we're probably going to have slightly lower collections this year with markets being the way that they are. And we think that it's important at this point to continue a strong investment because we can't do this individually on the farm. And it's more important than ever that we diversify our demand strategy, that we diversify our end users, and that we build real opportunities that lead to farmer profitability.
All right, Megan. I have to ask you, how do crops look in Northeast Missouri?
Well, we've gotten a lot of rain on our farm in Carroll County, Missouri. We're along the Missouri River, so this year is much better than last year. Our entire farm was under the Missouri River last year, and so we'll take this year over last. But yeah, we've had some drought stress, and then we got a whole lot of rain just this week. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, not ideal, but better than last year, right?
That's right. You know, the eternal optimism of the farm family.
Yep. Well, Megan, thank you very much. Glad to hear you had a good July meeting for the United Soybean Board and a lot of exciting things ahead as you invest those dollars into some valuable research to help improve profitability for soybean growers across the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Megan Kaiser from Missouri, United Soybean Board Treasurer. Again, they held their July meeting, a virtual meeting this time, but that's a big planning meeting to decide how they're going to invest those checkoff dollars in the coming year. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk it over with the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, Zippy Duvall. Zippy is battling the coronavirus, and he's doing well, he says, in his recovery, but it takes a while, and he's still trying to get back to full speed. He's not quite there yet, but he'll talk about what that's like, how he thinks he got the virus, and what are the symptoms and how he's dealing with it, plus his thoughts on some of the issues like an ag assistance package that Congress is working on, the two different versions and the different approaches. We'll get his thoughts on all that coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to AOA, Adams on Agriculture.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture. Now back to Mike Adams.
Bureau of Federation, Zippy Duval, who, as many of you know, has been battling the coronavirus. He joins us now, and we are so glad to be able to talk with him and get an update. Zippy, thanks for being with us. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm feeling a lot better. I had about 16 days of symptoms and had just about every symptom that they said you could have. And I guess the worst part of it, my temperature spiked 3 different times, but a lot of headaches, a lot of coughing. But, you know, just a real bad flu symptoms. And I've survived that and got my appetite back. And now I'm building my energy back to a level where I can be a little more productive than I was the last 3 weeks.
Were you feeling bad? Is that why you got tested, or had you been getting tested anyway? How did you find out?
My whole family got together, and I hope everybody kind of listens to this, because you always feel protected around your family. But my family all got together on 4th of July. My oldest son, after he'd been here for 2 days, discovered one of his people that he works with had been diagnosed as having the virus. The next day he started coming down with symptoms, was tested positive. The very next day I came down with symptoms and tested positive. So 3 days after I was exposed to him, I came down with it. So you never know where it's going to come from. It, you know, the president describes it as the invisible enemy, and that's exactly right, because I had no idea. My son had no idea he had been exposed.
What was the first symptom that you noticed?
Well, the first thing I started feeling was I had sore throat, and my temperature started going up, and then all the others followed behind. But the temperature and sore throat was the first thing I experienced.
Mm-hmm. So what's it been like, you know, kind of quarantined? How's that gone? That's probably been hard for you, hasn't it?
Well, you know, as most people across America in agriculture know, I lost my wife back in January, so It was already a different type of style of living. But then when you quarantine yourself in your house and with nobody can come in here to you, and all my neighbors, I put a table on the front porch and all my neighbors was bringing food by, and they took care of me at a distance. But it's been pretty strange being by myself for almost 3 weeks. But yeah. You know, I'm through it now, and I'm going back out to the grocery store now. I've been tested negative, and all I need to do is build my strength back. But everybody needs to take it serious, because it is not an easy thing to go through, and I know it treats everybody differently. My grandchildren basically had it 24 hours and they were over it, but you never know which one of us is going to have a bad reaction. Thank God I didn't have to go to the hospital. If Bonnie had been here, she probably would have had me in the hospital, but I didn't go, and I got through it. And my prayers go out to all my friends that have suffered through it and had a worse experience than I did.
We're talking with Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, recovering from COVID-19. So where would you say you're at? You feel 85%, 90%? How do you feel?
I think I'm about 70. I just don't have any energy. I get up feeling good, and then about mid-morning it starts tapering off, and tapers off pretty fast. But I think I'm about 70% there. I think in another week or so I'll be just right. Now, I never did quit working, of course. Working from home, you work on your computer, and it helped me keep my mind off of it. I struggled through some meetings, but I was able to keep working and stay on top of the issues, because our farmers have got so many issues facing them out there. I needed to make sure I stayed focused on that so we could help them get through it.
Well, of course, one of those issues is certainly COVID-related. That's the two different assistance packages in Congress right now that they're debating and trying to find a compromise. What are your thoughts on the two different bills, the $3 trillion bill in the House and the $1 trillion bill the Senate just recently passed?
Well, both of them actually look favorable to agriculture in different ways. And the Senate package that came through, we're real proud to see that $20 billion added to the Secretary's ability to help agriculture through this difficult time. You know, our biggest push was to raise the CCC purchasing powers up to $68 billion. It hadn't been raised since 1987. It was raised to $30 billion. And we think with the way the economy has went, that same level should be at $68 billion. You know, we didn't accomplish that, but we, in a roundabout way, we did, because with all the different packages between CFAP, CARES, and now the HEALS and the other one from the House. But if all that becomes reality, they will be at about $50 billion, and then they'll replenish the CCC this fall with another $30 billion, which would be $80. So I think we can claim victory on making sure there's enough money there, and then we'll be working hard on the next continuing resolution to make sure that we try to get that $30 billion raised to a reasonable level of $68 billion. But, you know, one of the big wins in the Senate side, though, that we're real proud of, and the Farm Bureau and National Chicken Council and our southern our poultry states worked real hard together to try to get something for contract poultry growers, and we have been successful so far in getting that in the HEALS Act. So we're real proud of that, and we're hoping we can make that stick.
There have been several in agriculture expressed concerns about the Senate version of basically giving that $20 billion to USDA and letting them decide how it goes out. And some have said they'd like to see more specific language about where it's going to go and how much. Have you talked with Secretary Perdue at all about that? Would he like to see more guidance?
I think under the current situation under COVID, and our farmers are in such dire need of getting that money out on the farm, and our rural economies needing that money floating around out there, I think to think that we're going to put strings attached to it and then we go through a big debate, it'd be almost like debating another farm bill as to how they could or couldn't use it. So I think on a certain current situation, that money needs to go to the Secretary. Nobody knows better than the Secretary of Agriculture where that money is really needed, and he can do it and do it swiftly, and that's what our farmers need.
Would you then encourage him to make sure ethanol is included in this one because it was not in CFAP?
You know, ethanol and the infrastructure around ethanol, the infrastructure around cotton with cotton gins and cotton and textile mills, all that infrastructure is very valuable to rural America. And those areas have suffered because of COVID. And I think that in this package, in this situation, that there should be some help there for our ethanol and those the infrastructures I just mentioned. Those are great markets for our farmers. A lot of our farmers are invested in ethanol production. A lot of our farmers depend on DDGs coming out of there to feed their animals. So in this situation, I think that there's a need there to provide some help.
Zippy, how concerned are you about the relationship between the U.S. and China? The latest, the U.S. requesting the WTO hit China with some countermeasures up to $1.3 billion, stemming back to the 2019 ruling on Chinese subsidies, and that's for, you know, going back for wheat and rice farmers back then. And that panel back in 2019 ruled that China was unfairly calculating its support prices for wheat and rice farmers, and now the U.S. saying that China is not living up to that ruling by the WTO. This kind of adds to what's going on and a lot of questions about the Phase One trade deal and whether China will stay in it and whether the U.S. will stay in it. What are your thoughts?
Well, we all know that the future of agriculture is brighter with a good trade relationships across the world, and we need to continue to tear down those barriers. And those are barriers you're talking about. They agreed to do the correct reporting. They haven't done it. Everybody wants to use WTO across the world, and if that vehicle allows us to bring some attention to some wrongdoings, we should do that. But the future of agriculture, you know, we only have 300 plus million people here in the United States. We can sell all our products there and have a lot left over. So we have to be part of that global market, and we got to have a level playing field to be able to compete with. This administration has renegotiated Korea, renegotiated Japan, is working on the UK and the EU, renegotiated USMCA, and the Phase One of the China agreement. And we see these huge purchases. I think this morning was a purchase of corn. It was the third largest purchase ever purchased from America, from China. And So those things are a very bright thing in the future of agriculture. Of course, we're very concerned about the rhetoric between our two countries, but this president has seemed to be able to keep things on track in a positive way for trade. And when he couldn't, and we had a trade war, he was there standing behind our farmers with the trade mitigation package. So we just got to trust him and try to pay attention to what's going on, and hopefully we can get through this and make that level playing field last for a long time, so that we can make our prices be more stable in the future.
That's Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Again, we wish him the very best in his continuing recovery from the coronavirus. Well, up next, we'll talk about this big corn purchase by China. We'll talk with Joe Camp, manager with AgriVisor, as China has made another record-breaking U.S. corn purchase, the sale of 1.937 million metric tons to China. We'll get some thoughts on that, some analysis, and look at the market reaction next on AOA.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture. Now, back to Mike Adams.
So China's made a big purchase of U.S. corn. Let's talk about it with Joe Camp, manager with AgriVisor. Joe, thanks for joining us. Just as we get really concerned about the rhetoric flying back and forth between the U.S. and China and wonder about this trade deal, well, here comes another big purchase. What are your thoughts? How do the markets look at it?
Good morning, Mike. We're talking about record purchases from the Chinese. And on the corn side, we're talking about very good demand as of late on soybeans, even some wheat purchases bouncing around, and potential for more to come. But yet the market seemingly also shrugging it off and not gaining much in the way of upside momentum because of the recent strength in export demand. I think that's just because of the longer-term worry of whether or not we see a buyer like China follow through.
Yeah, so I think most of us thought if we'd have seen these kind of purchases, we'd have seen a stronger market reaction. But I guess until we get further into the year and see how close they come to those phase one commitments, the market's not going to be impressed yet.
I think that's part of it. The idea that the phase one trade deal is still very much vulnerable. Political headaches abound. We're still approaching an election that could very much have a sway in the U.S.-China trade relations. We're talking about uncertainty as of whether or not they're going to follow through on the sales commitments to take delivery. Now, the idea is that likely they very much will, because the Chinese are buying based off a fundamental of natural, real need, consumptive demand for soy protein and feed grains there, and less so maybe because of efforts to try to fill the phase one trade deal commitment. So that's a positive that we do see strong actual demand coming out of China. It's just about whether or not the relations can continue to scale back from what we've seen recently, which is a re-escalation. So, yeah, record sales, though, as of late, that we should be positive about if we do down the road, as we'd expect, get really busy starting to ship them out of the country.
So we assume they're buying out of need. What does this tell us about their corn stocks?
We can see that they're buying out of need based off a couple of reasons. One is the activity in the domestic market. We're talking about record corn prices in China because we've got recovering animal herds. We've got the African swine fever storyline and a growing hog herd recovery there happening, it seems, maybe faster than anticipated. We've also got a recovery, for the most part, economically speaking, being underway, staging for the Chinese after the COVID shutdown. So it is an economy that is reaccelerating, and that is supportive of commodity demand. Again, you also have along the same lines some focus on the phase one trade deal, and that's a good thing for the Chinese government to support. It's private buyers going out into the market, and one, seeing that domestic corn prices as high as they are, can be replaced for cheaper offers out of the U.S. We have a dollar that's falling recently to help out trade terms for our U.S. shippers. And we've also got, again, that domestic market interplay where we see rising prices in China and elsewhere indicate that they're able to replace their corn on hand with new supplies out of the U.S. That's, too, something we're talking a lot about as it relates to the recent Chinese auctions of corn, which have shown phenomenal demand, 100% demand out of those auctions, and moving through corn of yesteryear, too, 2014 and 2015 stocks being eaten up, shipped maybe to other parts of Asia, too, and again replaced with U.S. stocks, buying more corn the Chinese are than we'd anticipated for this point of the year.
They're still not buying ethanol, and I guess at least part of that's a tariff issue.
A tariff issue, yes. So I think in terms of the trade relations, there doesn't look to be any hope for real progress to come soon, maybe not before the November election. But we see that down the road, there's still that opportunity because while they've put the brakes on it, they haven't, the Chinese policymakers have not totally retracted their plans to implement a new ethanol plan in that country. And if they're going to meet some of the targets which were being bounced around in the past couple of years, we would suspect that they would very much have to lean on ethanol imports, and the U.S. would be, of course, a good source for that market.
We're talking with AgriVisor Manager Joe Camp. I guess, Joe, as we look at market reaction, even with a big purchase like this, they're still kind of offsetting that is the prospect of what looks to be a pretty good crop coming here in the U.S. Some trouble spots, but overall some very good crops, it looks like.
Yeah, you got it. We can be very optimistic about prospects for demand. Sure, about the uncertainties that we mentioned, trade relations, maybe a rebound for the dollar. Anything can happen here to maybe put at risk some of these really good showings out of the trade data. But at the end of the day, we can look here at home, too, and see all the domestic sources of demand, ethanol production having recovered in a bigger way, soybean processing is still at record levels here. So demand good, but it's that other side that you mentioned related to growing yield prospects that's weighing on the market. And that's because it's almost August. It's the weather market. We're watching the forecast, and as of late, better conditions for most across the belt. We know that's not the case for everybody, so we'll still wonder if any supply-side concern might show up in August. But for now, it's the bears that are focused on supply, yield, and weather that remain in control of the market.
Real quick, if you've got old crop corn that you haven't sold yet, what's your recommendation?
We're waiting on a potentially slight opportunity to open in August before the seasonal pressure. So a small rebound from here, we'd be securing old crop sales and then moving focus towards the new.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot. Interesting. And certainly when China steps into the market in a big way, it gets a lot of attention. But even if the markets haven't gone wild about it, it's still more corn, hopefully, that is headed that way. We'll wait and see when it's actually loaded and sent over there. Thanks a lot, Joe. Good to see you. Good to talk with you, rather, and hope to see you soon. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Joe Camp, Manager, AgriVisor. All right, that wraps it up for today and for the week. Next week, of course, we'll be seeing what Congress does with the assistance package, and keep an eye on the situation with China as well, plus much, much more. Have a great weekend, a safe weekend, and be sure to join us again on Monday right here on AOA.